So in this Purvanga karma, this preliminary activity, then after preparing the ourselves, the place, and the articles for worship, then we come to the preliminary worship, Guru and Garanga. Okay. Preliminary worship of the spiritual master, Guru Puja. Krishna Kshetra Prabhu here writes, one must begin each session of worship by worshipping the spiritual master. By this worship, the devotee gains the mercy of the Kripa Shakti of the spiritual master, which is the first and foremost essential step in approaching the Lord. Only by pleasing the spiritual master and gaining his mercy, and only by approaching him as the Vaya Media, can one offer anything to the Lord. Pancharatrika scripture strongly emphasizes this. Quote, he who first worships the spiritual master and then worships me, Bhagavan, attains perfection. Otherwise, one's worship is fruitless. Hari Bhakti Vilas 4.3.4.4. Then, he who worships someone else before worshiping the Guru attains simply misfortune. His worship is useless. It's also Hari Bhakti Vilas 4.3.4.5. One should first come before one's spiritual master, pay obeisances to him, present him with some offering, and worship him with devotion. Having gained his grace, one should then worship the Supreme Lord, Hari Bhakti Vilas. So what, you may worship the spiritual master in a picture, a murti, a yantra. That's a diagram with the special mantras on it. A ghat, installed water pot. Or you may worship the spiritual master's shoes, which are considered non-different from him. Generally, worship of the spiritual master is done to his picture or murti. The picture of the spiritual master should include his complete form. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends worshipping the spiritual master with 16 upachars. But if this is not practical, one may worship him with 12, 10, or 5 upachars, depending upon ability and circumstances. If possible, you should perform the worship with the actual articles. If not, you may offer flowers with chandan or pure water as substitutes for the articles, while saying the appropriate mantras. If this is not possible, then you should at least worship the spiritual master by Manasa Puja, worship in the mind. Concluding the worship with pranam and request of the spiritual master permit you to serve the Lord. Okay, let's see, page 18, Upachara substitution. Okay, then here in the supplement, then it mentions substitutes for items of worship. In his Bhagavatam purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, here we understand desha kala to mean according to time and country. Such deity paraphernalia as flower garlands, fruits, vegetables should be collected according to the country and according to their availability. Bhagavatam 4.8.55 purport. So Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes, if you lack any items for worship, or for worshiping the Lord, you may substitute flowers, raw white rice, barley, tulsi leaves, or pure water for the missing articles. The easiest and most common substitutes are water and flower petals. When the time comes to offer the missing article, say the mantra for offering that article, and meditate on it as being presented as you offer the substitute, water, and so on. Then discard the water or flowers into a vessel set aside for that purpose, the Visarjaniya Patra. Thus, even the poorest person possessing only a few vessels, flowers, and pure water, can worship the Lord in full opulence by means of mantra, meditation, and devotion, and receive the greatest mercy of the Lord. A further note, Even if an article is not missing, you may meditate that you are offering more and better quality of that particular article. For example, a scarcity of flowers may force you to offer only one, perhaps not particularly good quality. May force you to offer only one, perhaps not particularly good quality flower, in an artique. But while offering it, you can meditate that you are offering a full plate of fragrant roses to the Lord. Such meditation will not go in vain. Okay. So in this also is that generally before there's a dhyanam, when you're getting into this fuller worship, then there's a meditation, a dhyan. And during that, then one offers so many kinds of items according to how you like, what kind of seed, what water, you know, so many things. Like you're doing in meditation, you can meditate that you've collected water from all the sacred rivers or so many different places, and then that water is used in the bath for the Lord. But at the same time, as in actuality, you may just have, you know, water out of the tap, you know, by the mercy of the local municipality. But in meditation, one can meditate upon all these things. So in this, the preliminary worships, this, then one just does whatever is there, the purification, and then the worship. But here, then now we're getting to the point where we've prepared everything. Now we're seriously approaching the Lord. So in this, then the meditation can be there. On worshiping of, we do meditation, and then after that, then we offer the articles. So, yeah, explanation is coming with the worship of Gauranga. Okay, Gauranga Puja. Before worshipping Radha and Krishna, the followers of Lord Chaitanya first worship Lord Chaitanya. For only through him can we hope to approach the service of Radha and Krishna. Then he makes a point here, Krishna Kshetra, a note. Of course, in temples where Gornitai are the main deities, it is unnecessary to perform this preliminary worship of Lord Chaitanya, since he will be worshipped in full along with Lord Nityananda. In temples where there are Gornitai deities and where the main deities are Radha and Krishna or Jagannath, the pujari worshipping Radha and Krishna or Jagannath should do preliminary worship to Lord Chaitanya or Gornitai or the full Panchatattva in a picture. If one pujari is worshipping all sets of the deities, he should worship Gornitai before worshipping Radha and Krishna. The main deities are accepting worship through the Shaligram, as explained on page 39. The pujari should do preliminary worship of Lord Chaitanya in a picture before worshipping the Shaligram Shila. In other words, you have Guru, Gauranga, and then Radha and Krishna, or Jagannath, like this, right? Guru, Gauranga, and then Krishna in the worship. Now, whichever is your main deity that you're worshipping, you must do the other ones as preliminary. So if you're worshipping Radha and Krishna, you worship Guru and Gauranga as preliminary worship, not as the main worship. Lord Chaitanya is your main worship. Then you worship Guru as the preliminary worship. And if Guru is the main worship, then you don't, you know, you just prepare the paraphernalia. You understand that? It means wherever you're worshiping, before that, that's preliminary. Or if one pujari has to do all of them, then he'll do one, and then the next, and then the next, but in that order. Is this understood? This is, though, a simple point, is very extremely important, because many of pujari becomes confused with all this, right? We have to be able to distinguish between preliminary worship that is part of Purvanga Karma and the main worship, which is Ija, right? It's a subtlety. Ija means basically the external offering of the items, the actual offering of the main items, the 64 to the deity, whoever is your main deity, whether that's directly to the main deity or through the Shaligram Shila, right? But all the other worship other than that, like Guru and Gauranga before that, that is preliminary. That's yoga. Right? Remember we said there's five parts of deity worship. Five angas. Abhigamana, approaching the temple. Upadana, preparing the paraphernalia. Yoga, which is preparing basically bringing one's consciousness to the transcendental platform and all the paraphernalia. And then Ija is offering all the paraphernalia to the Lord. And then Swadhyaya is the study and performance of devotional activities. All right? So we have to be able to distinguish between yoga and Ija. So preliminary worship, that is yoga. So yoga, purvanga karma, or preliminary worship, they're all meaning the same thing. All right? Okay, says here on Gauranga, you may perform worship with 16, 12, 10, or 5 items, as in Guru Puja, or with as many items as possible, plus substitute items. You should conclude the worship of Lord Chaitanya with pranam, begging his mercy to perform Radha Krishna worship. Srila Prabhupada writes of the importance of worshipping Gaur Nithai. By serving Gaur Nityananda, one is freed from the entanglements of material existence, and thus becomes qualified to worship the Radha Krishna deity. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 8:31 purport. Then meditation, dhyana. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 3:28-18, Lord Kapiladeva instructs his mother on meditation. Quote, one should therefore meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead and upon his devotees. One should meditate on the external form of the Lord until the mind becomes fixed. So Krishna Kshetra continues. Dhyana means concentration of the mind on the Lord and his associates, paraphernalia, pastimes, and abode. In deity worship, the object of meditation is the deity being worshipped. The mind is purified through Bhutashuddhi and becomes spiritualized by concentrating on the Lord's form and pastimes. The form of the Lord in the mind is considered a murti of the Lord, non-different from the Lord himself, and the worshipper's mind is a peet, or sacred altar of the Lord. The form of the Lord one meditates on should correspond to authorized descriptions from bona fide Shastra. Some puja manuals contain verses describing the deity being worshipped, and one may recite these at this time. The important element, however, is not the recitation of the Sanskrit verses, but of the form of the Lord that the description evokes in the mind. Thus, if you find that reciting a translation of the original Sanskrit verses in your mother language is more conducive to visualization of the Lord's form in the mind, you should follow this practice. So now, a description of Manasa Puja. After meditating on the... Okay, so this is now you've done Guru and Gauranga, the preliminary worship and all that. Right? Now I see now what he's doing here. Okay, so what he's doing here is he's not putting much emphasis on the Manasa Puja for Guru and Gauranga, which is okay. It can be very simple. Or not so much. There's some prayers that just describe it, and like in one verse or like that. We'll see when we get to the details that there are verses that describe this. Then after that, then one gets into the serious meditation upon the Lord, whatever's the main deity. In other words, in the preliminary worship, we have the worship of Guru, worship of Gauranga, and then the Manasa Puja for the main deity, for Radha and Krishna. Is this clear? Right? If it's not clear, ask. We'll try to explain. It'll become more clear as time goes on. Okay? So in the... Yeah. So then there's the dhyana, where you think of the Lord, and then there's the manasa puja, where you actually perform the worship with the... with paraphernalia within the mind. Is this getting any clearer? In other words, you have... yoga means you have to bring the mind to the spiritual platform. Right? So, that means you... we have all that we describe the satshuddhis, the six kinds of aspects of cleanliness, the place, sthanshuddhi, the mind, chitta shuddhi, the body, atma shuddhi, the paraphernalia, dravya shuddhi, then the mantra, mantra shuddhi, and the deity, or murti shuddhi, right? So we discuss the mantra is pure by maintaining one's Krishna conscious vows and activities. Then the deity is cleansed. We'll get to that where we just wipe with the cloth like that beforehand, before we start the puja. So then that leaves, then four things have to be cleaned. So the body has to be cleaned and the place has to be cleaned. So that's all part of abhigamana. Cleaning the deity room and the paraphernalia, the gross cleaning of the paraphernalia, cleaning that, us taking our bath, putting fresh clothes, all that. So this leaves now the mind and... no, we already did the deity. The body, the place, or the paraphernalia. So now we've done the, and, yeah. So the mind is the most important thing here. So we want to bring that to the spiritual platform. Then the paraphernalia also needs to be brought to that platform. Right, to that spiritual platform. The sthan is done by the asanasthapana. When you worship the seat, then it comes to that platform, right? Then the paraphernalia, you purify that, and by chanting of mantra and all that, that comes to that platform. Then the body, you identify yourself as a servant of the Lord, so that brings it also, the mind in that, the consciousness to that platform. But now to further, now on that platform, now we must approach the Lord. Understand? So we can see even in the Purvanga Karma, basically we means in here has been described two parts. Preliminary, getting all the paraphernalia and all that, and the spiritualization of the mind, paraphernalia in place. Right? Then we have, the second part is, on that spiritual platform, then approaching the Lord through Guru and Gauranga. Alright? Is this understood? Huh? More clear? Okay, so now in this, now we've just discussed worship of Guru, now worship of Lord Chaitanya. Then we talk about the meditation on the Lord, where we chant the mantras and we meditate upon the Lord. Then we're going to do manasa puja, or worship within the mind, because this will then completely fix the mind. You understand? What is not clear?
It starts with the sun worship for Guru and Gauranga. That's preliminary, right?
Yes, but now still preliminary is the manasa, is dhyana, or meditation on the Lord, and manasa puja. Yeah, this is, everything's on the altar. You've already established your asan, you've sat down, all your paraphernalia is there, and now you're starting the worship. Okay? Well, here, preliminary, even the manasa puja of Radha and Krishna, dhyana on Radha and Krishna, is still preliminary worship. But it's preliminary, but done on the platform of the mind. Right? Because it's the mind. Our problem is the mind. The body is dead matter, right? The senses are dead matter. So the whole problem is the mind is attached to this dead matter, and trying to find happiness through the material nature. So the whole idea of the Pancharatra is how to turn the mind from dead matter to transcendence, to the Lord. So we serve the Lord with spiritual senses. Right? Hrishikesha, Hrishikena, Sevanam, Bhakti Ruchate. Right? That with spiritualized senses, we serve the Lord. Right? That's the whole idea. Then we become purified and we come to the transcendental platform. Does that make some sense? Okay. So that includes doing meditation and worship of the Lord with the mind. Okay? Like that. Only after that's completed, then we finish the Purvanga Karma, the preliminary activities. Then it moves from yoga into Ija, into the main worship. Okay? Just don't worry if you feel confused. There's practically a pujari on the planet that's not confused by this. Yeah, of course, that is there. But even those who are doing practical, unless you've done it in this way, it still won't make any sense. It means you have to be able to tell the difference between worship on as Purvanga Karma or Yoga and worship as Ija. If one can understand this, then one can get great benefit out of the Pancharatric system. And if one can't, then one should continue chanting Hare Krishna until one can. And just be, happy attending artiques and going to the program and watching everybody else do it. Huh? Yeah. This is the new watch.
Yes. I have one question. When you do Manasa Puja, do you, over all the articles, 7 times, whatever, how do you do Manasa Puja? Why is it quicker than the Bhagavad Puja?
Why is it quicker? Because
yeah.
The mind moves quicker than the body. Just like you're here now. Okay? Now, think of Amsterdam. Okay? There's a small gap, right? Isn't it? You go to think of Amsterdam, it takes a little time for you to get there. That's the speed of mind. That little gap is that much time that it takes the mind to get there. You understand? So, but that's how quick. Now, let's say you want to get your body there. Can you get there that quick? So the mind can move faster than the body. That's the whole point. Like if you want to bring Ganga water for the deity, you can just be there at the Ganga, get the water, and then be back. Right? So in the mind, you can do that within a matter of seconds. You understand? You don't have to see yourself going to the godown, looking for the kalash for putting the water in, then going and finding Janani Vas and who took the kalash, and then going back down and getting the key and then they put it in somewhere else, then getting it out, then taking it upstairs, then polishing. You don't have to do that. All you do is just have your pot, you're at the Ganga, you go in the water, take the water, and then you're back in the pujari room with it. You don't have to worry about walking in between and watching out for the rickshaw wallahs and talking to the other brahmacharis on the way. And, all that stuff can be left out in the mind. You understand? So therefore it goes very quickly. You understand? Like that. So then, says then, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes here, after meditating on the form of the Lord, you should engage your mind in worshipping that form. Dhyana is the preparation for Manasa Puja. Whereas Dhyana is passive, Manasa Puja is active. Whatever items you offer externally, you should first offer internally with full devotion and attention. So in a footnote, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes, Manasa Puja should include the same number or more items as the external worship will include, not less. Thus, if worshipping with 16 items in the external worship, the Manasa Puja should also include 16 items, right? Then, also, whereas the items offered in external worship may be simple due to modest means, in the course of Manasa Puja, one may perform very opulent worship of the Lord. Then he says here, see the Nectar of Devotion, chapter 10, for the story of the Brahmana devotee who burned his finger on Manasa Puja sweet rice. So Manasa Puja is the culmination of dhyan. The Shastra points out that for one performing sadhana bhakti, the puja with paraphernalia is ineffective without Manasa Puja. Puja performed with paraphernalia but without Manasa Puja may be the cause of offense for the neophyte, for he will tend to see the deity as a material object. Thus Manasa Puja, or Antar Yoga, is essential in all types of deity worship. Elevated souls, especially sannyasis who are always traveling, often perform only this type of worship, as exemplified in the following passage from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Quote, when Sri Nisringananda Brahmachari heard that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go to Vrindavan, he became very pleased and mentally began decorating the way there. First he contemplated a broad road starting from the city of Kulia. He bedecked the road with jewels, upon which he then laid a bed of stemless flowers. He mentally decorated both sides of the road with bokul flower trees, and at intervals on both sides he placed lakes of transcendental nature. These lakes had bathing places constructed with jewels, and they were filled with blossoming lotus flowers. There were various birds chirping, and the water was exactly like nectar. The entire road was surcharged with many cool breezes, which carried the fragrances from various flowers. He carried the construction of this road as far as Kanai Natshala. Within the mind of Nisringananda Brahmachari, the road could not be constructed beyond Kanai Natshala. He could not understand why the road's construction could not be completed, and thus he was astonished. With great assurance, he then told the devotees that Lord Chaitanya would not go to Vrindavan at that time. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 151-161. So both dhyan and manasa puja are performed not only for the main deity, but also for the spiritual master and Lord Chaitanya in preliminary worship. Oh, I see. Because he hadn't explained it before, now he's just in retrospect. But they may be more simple and more quick. Is that when you're doing the preliminary puja, which is different from the main puja. Preliminary puja is part of Purvanga Karma Yoga. So you worship the spiritual master. Spiritual master means there's a dhyana, you meditate on the spiritual master, there's a short manasa puja, and then the offering of the 16 items. But these 16 will be done very, very quickly. Right? Either they'll be very simple, done with just flowers, done with just water. So that whole thing should just be very short, within a few minutes. You know? And then the same for Lord Chaitanya. So this will be both generally done to pictures, like that. Then after that, then we will do the Manasa Puja, the meditation, dhyan for the main deity. Then we will do the Manasa Puja, which will be more full, more elaborate. Then we will start the main worship of the deity. So this, yes.
The technique of Manasa Puja, when you go to the 16 items, it's enough just to like picture the offering, is that like a slideshow, or you just have to pause and just think that the right person has the offering to the tree?
No, it depends upon the case. Especially for the spiritual master and for Lord Chaitanya, I would work on the slideshow. But for the main deity, then one can use a multimedia. It can be, you know, you can just move from like a few aspects of one scene and then a few aspects of the next scene. You don't have to do the full scene from how you go from one into the next. Unless that's a very important aspect or something that you want to do. You know, you want to take the Lord on the palanquin to the bathing, you know, things like that. More is just the paraphernalia, seeing it, the offering of it. You don't have to go through, you know, seven times, four times, three times, like that. Because the point of the Manasa Puja is when you go to offer the external items, you will remember the Manasa Puja. So all you need is one scene of the artik let's say you're offering lamp, you only need one picture of that to remember during the whole time where you're going through all the numbers and everything like that. One picture can be seen through that whole time. You don't have to, in the Manasa Puja, offer 4 times, and 2 times, and 3 times, and 7 times, and then like that. That's not the point of the Manasa Puja. The Manasa Puja is to stop the mind from material activities and fix it on the Lord. That's the purpose. Right? So then, when you offer the item, you'll remember that picture in the Manasa Puja. So pictures are enough, but it can be an elaborate picture, depending on how much you have to get into it. Once you've already established the place, then just adding a lamp into that doesn't require a whole lot more meditation. But the first, like you say, asana, that first establishing that asana, you know. But that's generally what you would do in the manasaput, in the dhyana. Dhyana, you'll establish all that. Then you will then invite the Lord, and then everything starts happening. You understand? So you can move from one picture to the next. You know, unless you can move through things. Doesn't mean that you do it like the Keystone Cops. Everything is suddenly very quick and all that. You know? It just means that you just take those essential parts that you need. You know? Is this understood? Is this clear? Yes.
When you come to the main data, then you might do the things, also remember the things around, you know, in your body.
Can.
Like, so, situation or picture of that also.
Can, but the main thing is it still should fit within a proper amount of time.
Yeah.
See, one should not get so elaborate, get so enthusiastic about the Manasa Puja that one falls asleep. Right? Like that. And it shouldn't be something that one cannot maintain. One day you do something very elaborate, and then after that, then you don't want to do so much. It has to be something that the mind can accommodate. So it should be within a few minutes. You know, I mean, for the guru, you could go through it probably less than a minute. For the deity, maybe, you know, 1 to 3 minutes. But that's all the longer it should be taking. It shouldn't be taking longer than that. Means if you are not worshipping the deity, you have no deity and you're just doing Manasa Puja, and that is your worship, then you might get into actually offering all the different articles and that, but you don't have to get into the gaps in between, you know, going and getting it or picking it up or, you know what I'm saying? Then you can just have the actual just offering the article and then you're putting that in the next article and like that. That's if you aren't going to be doing any external worship. Then you can do more. So you may take 5 minutes, 10 minutes like that. That's not a problem. If you're not going to do the external worship, then you can do all that. But what I'm saying, if you're going to do the external worship, it's not so important to be chanting those, because you're going to do that in the external worship. Because point is you're going to do the external worship, but the point is if one hasn't done the Manasa Puja, the tendency is that external worship will be a ritual. You'll just go through it and you'll be thinking of breakfast. Right? So the whole point is that when you pick up the lap at something and you say, you know, whatever it is, idam asanam, you're going to be thinking of whatever the asana was there. You don't have to think of that in the Manasa Puja I said idam asanam. That's not going to add anything to it. You understand? So don't add things to your Manasa Puja that aren't going to add anything to the external puja. Whole idea is you're saying idam asanam and there's not much of an asana there, you know? Right? It's just a place there to sit. You know, there's not something special. But in the mind, when in the Manasa Puja in the mind, you can have a very nice, elaborate, you know, jewel-inlaid throne for the Lord to sit on. So then when in your external puja, when you say idam asanam, you'll be seeing that within the mind when you bring the Lord to that, to your just, you know, he's just sitting on the marble there, you know, and there's nothing there. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, don't in one's new enthusiasm add into things in the Manasa Puja that don't really add to it. See, the Brahman here in the Nectar Devotion, he had no deity to worship. So he would go and spend, you know, whatever the time, an hour or whatever it was that he would be worshiping the deity, totally in Manasa Puja and get into all details. He would cook the sweet rice, he would do all the things, go and collect the waters and do everything. You understand? Make the plate for offering, and like he would be making the plate for the offering. And then while he made the plate, he thought, it's too hot, let me check. And then he burned his finger. But in the Manasa Puja, where you're going to do the external worship, you don't have to go to such detail. You just have to have a plate that's already made. You don't have to make the plate in your mind. You just have to have that plate. Right? Because in the puja, you're just going to take the plate that's already been made on the side. You made it before in upadana. Right? Even before yoga. And you're just going to put it before the Lord. But now when you put it before the Lord, you're going to remember the plate that was in your Manasa Puja. Right? So instead of just being on, you know, whatever it is, whatever plate the deity plate is, it can be a gold plate or it can be, you know, so many different things. And you've offered two or three things, you can offer more things in the mind. So that will come to play. Understand? In other words, Manasa Puja is for fixing the mind on the deity and to offer things that will, for the Lord's pleasure. So you don't have to go through things that aren't necessarily going to add, right? Because Prabhupada was expecting that, you know, the puja would be done quite quickly, you know? I remember, I think it was Purna Pragya and Narayani in Calcutta. They said, I think he expected the puja for the deities to be done in 20 minutes. You know? So he was kind of surprised it would take them so long. So he expected it just to be done very quickly. You know? Because it's mentioned. Something done in the mode of goodness is done quickly and nicely. Something done in the mode of passion is done quickly and badly. And then something done in the mode of ignorance is done slowly and badly. Right? And now comes the question, what about nicely and slowly? Right? That's called a mix of the mode of goodness and mode of ignorance. Because you'll generally find you'll fall asleep. Right? You have another combination. What about... Yes?
Like, we can recite the names of the articles in the mind, perhaps bring them forth in the mind, because...
You can. It's flow, you know. Whatever it takes to get it done. Means if to get the... Just to perform the Manasa Puja, you have to say Idam Asanam, otherwise the mind won't think of what is the, you know, the first item. Then do it. Point is be practical. Don't turn this into a whole convoluted ritual. And then once you've done it one way, then you have to do it that way. But I can't do it that way because my mind won't do it. And it was too heavy. But if I don't do it that way, I don't feel good. And so I don't want to do the worship. This is the whole point why Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna, be happy. Because it's very difficult to teach these subtleties to you know... Once you cross the ocean, it becomes very difficult. You know? That's why in the Shastras it says, don't cross the ocean. Because when you cross the ocean, then you run into all kinds of strange species that it's very difficult to train them in all these things. You understand? The Manasa Puja is an aid to something. So if we make things so complicated, it's no longer an aid anymore. Right? This is a very unique thing about the Western culture, is if something is very simple, it's considered very ordinary. Anyone could do it. But if it's very complicated, then it becomes sophisticated and very special, unique, elite, you know, desirable. But the Vedic concept is simple living, high thinking, which means it's very simple, and it's very and it's sophisticated because of its simplicity. Right? Means the concepts, the understandings are very sophisticated, but it's done in the simplest way. Simplest, most direct, effective way. Right? Without losing anything, you know? Without losing the culture, without losing the philosophy or the purpose. It's done like this. So we see that the how you do things in India is very simple, very easy. Like you go into an high-class Indian kitchen, and you won't find anything in the kitchen. Right? It's just a floor. Right? And all the paraphernalia is kept somewhere else, like that. And you bring your paraphernalia, and then you cook. Then afterwards you pick it all up and you clean the kitchen, it's finished. But in the West, they couldn't dream of cooking like that. You have to have your stoves, your this, your that, your special knife just for this, your special knife just for that, your special thing just for this, special thing just for that. Millions of things all over the place. And the only reason that the place is clean is because if it's not clean and it has a cockroach in, then the government will come and shut you down. Mm-hmm. Right? Right? So their thing is, our kitchen's all stainless steel and all this and all that and so many different things. But in India, you don't need all that. You can get the same thing done without any of that. Right? So complicated does not mean better. Right? Like that. Like you'll see. You go to a poor person's house. And there's not much stuff in the house. It's not so well kept. Right? Can be. Depends on the culture. You go to someone who thinks they're rich. They have a lot of stuff packed into the house. So much stuff they have. Not well kept. You go to someone who for generations they've been wealthy, and you have only a few things in the house, but all those things are very good quality, and they're well kept. You understand? So this concept that is very complicated and that is very important, that is something from the West, or those who went, you know, the nouveau riche, like that. They are thinking like this. But the point is that those who are just like in Versailles, right? Louis the 14th's place. He has one room. You know, it's not such a big room, but it's a room. You know, 10 feet by 10 feet or something like that. You know, very nice plain, some windows, some nice curtains, you know, nice plasterwork on the ceiling and all that. And in the center of the room there's one marble pillar, and on that marble pillar there's a clock. So that is the clock room. All that's in that room is the clock. Nothing else. Understand? Very simple. You know? It's done in such a way the clock gets enough light so you can see it. These surroundings are very pleasant when you come to look at the clock. Whenever you want to know what time it is, you go to the clock room. Right? You understand? They don't put 5 million pieces of junk in there. There's only one clock and one pedestal. So like that is sophistication doesn't mean complicated. You can be very sophisticated and be very simple. So one has to remember that the point is you want to get the result of remembering Krishna so that one is purified before starting the puja, and when one's doing the puja, that one will remember Krishna. Right? In other words, one will continue that remembrance. But if you get so complicated in things that the Manasapuja then becomes caught up with the whole ritual, and then you forget about Krishna doing that, then what's the use? Right? So whatever you need to remember Krishna, you put that much in. Don't put more. So if you need to say the mantras, or you need to, you know, see yourself offering the lamp in so many circles, do it. If you don't, don't. The whole idea is that within a few minutes, you should finish the Manasapuja. Because otherwise, if you stretch it out for 10, 20 minutes, then you're going to be late doing your puja. All the other pujaris are going to, you know, get upset. Plus, you're going to fall asleep. One may say, no, my meditation is so good, I won't fall asleep. If your meditation was so good, it wouldn't take you 20 minutes. Right? If you can go from here to the other side of the world in, you know, a fraction of a second, why we can't go through the puja? You understand? Right? The person who says, no, I do a long one because I can concentrate very nicely, it means I can't concentrate. Therefore, it takes me so much time to do. Or they're getting into great detail. Someone doing their own private puja, they want to sit there and do 4 hours puja. It's their own time, no one else is going to bother them. That's up to them. But we're talking about in the temple, where, you know, it's expected. You have a time schedule you have to go through. You know, you have to be ready on time. You know, you have to count setting up, cleaning up, all that. So then one has to be able to do this in the proper amount of time. Okay? Are we clear on this Manasa Puja? Okay. So then after Manasa Puja, then we start offering the 16 items of worship. Right? So this is the fifth in the 64 items, but it's the first of the 16. So, inviting the Lord by offering Him a seat, asana, and making Him comfortable, swagata. So we discussed this a bit before. Asana means the situation or setting in which the Lord is being offered a certain type of worship. The Lord is surrounded by His associates who offer Him various services. And among these associates is one's own spiritual master. Since it is through him that the disciple gains admittance into the Lord's service, the disciple should understand one asana to be the seat or position where the spiritual master performs his service to the Lord. As Srila Prabhupada explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 24.334 purport, quote, there must be an asana, a sitting place before the altar. This asana is for the spiritual master. The disciple brings everything before the spiritual master, and the spiritual master offers everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then Krishna Kshetra Prabhu continues, as part of Shodasha Opachar Puja, that means 16 items. Shodasha, Sho means 6, and Dasha means 10, so 16, Shodasha. Then Shodasha, and then upachara, so the dasha and u, the a and u combine to become o. So you have shodasha upachara. As part of shodasha upachara puja, you should also You should also offer an asana to the Lord. A common way is to place flowers or flower petals where He will stand to receive padya argyam achmanium etc. before the bath. Swagata means welcome and comfort. You should ask the Lord if He is comfortable, and then with affection meditate on welcoming Him and satisfying Him nicely. Srila Prabhupada explains, Vrindavan means everyone is engaged how to keep Krishna in comfort. This is Vrindavan. Not for personal comfort. The whole Vrindavan is engaged, beginning with Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, the young gopis, and the young cowherd boys. That is Vrindavan. Krishna is the center. So the more we become engaged with the view to giving Krishna the comfortable position, that is our aim of life, then we can be liberated. It's from A Transcendental Diary by Hari Suri. Okay, then after... So as we discuss, is that we have the Lord, the situation is there for the service. The Lord is there, His associates is there, the spiritual master is there, we're assisting the spiritual master. So our entrance into the pastime is the asana in which the spiritual master is performing his worship. That's our entrance. So for us, asana means the asana of the spiritual master. Same time, the Lord will be given a place to sit, but we're able to view that through the door of the spiritual master. Right? Therefore, that must be there. One can also, in the Manasa Puja, therefore, have the spiritual master doing the worship instead of us doing the worship. Then in the external puja, then we'll see the spiritual master doing that and we'll be assisting. Like that. That is also. Well, you're doing the puja. Well, how are you going to see yourself doing the thing? Suddenly you'll be there, a peacock, and with your foot you'll be holding the lamp and offering it. Be being very careful not to catch your tail feathers on fire with the camphor lamp. In other words, in this, the Manasa Puja, one can either see the spiritual master doing the worship, right? And we're just assisting. In other words, we see the spiritual master there, and then when we do the external puja, we'll be offering the item, but in the mind we'll see the spiritual master offering. So then we'll get that. Or one will see the Lord, and one will see the paraphernalia being offered. In other words, you will not see yourself in the picture. You will not be back from the picture seeing yourself offer. That is sahaja, because how did you get the picture? Right? You understand? So you see the Lord and you're offering a lamp, maybe you see like how you see now. You don't see yourself offering, you see your arm and that's it. Okay? It's very important, because otherwise if you see yourself in the picture, then until you are in the picture, that's called sahaja. It means when you come to the Brahmaputta platform and you have therefore, and received Sarup Siddhi from the Lord, one of his eternal associates, or the spiritual master, then only one can put oneself in there and do all these different things. One can see oneself doing these things. That understood? Important. Because those who misunderstand this point become sahajis. Makes sense. Okay. Then, after offering the Lord a seat and welcoming him, then, yes. Then we are removing his night clothes and wrapping the Lord in a gamsha. Ideally, the gamsha should remain on the deity throughout the cleaning, polishing of the deity's metal, and bathing, and should be removed when the Lord is being dried. At that time, offer him a dry gamsha. The towel for drying and the dry gamsha are both called angavastra, the 22nd upachara. So anga means limbs, and vastra means, you know, cloth. So the limbs for the cloth for the limbs is called angavastra. Okay, that will come up when we get to the details of the puja. Then number 6, offering a twig for brushing the teeth, danta kashta or danta dhavana. Srila Prabhupada writes, after Mangalartik, the deity is supposed to wash his teeth by using a twig. Therefore, a twig must be offered. Then in a footnote, Krishna Kshetra mentions, alternatively, you may offer Dantakashta just after waking the Lord before performing Mangalartik. So it's either you wake the deities up, you know, then they're placed on the altar, you're offering them something to eat, and then opening for Artik. Another way is you wake them up, you brush their teeth, you know, wash their hands, their mouth, their feet, all this. Then they come to the altar, take something to eat, or they come to the altar and do all that. Then is Mangalartik. So either before or after Mangalartik, this should be offered, one or the other. Especially if you're doing more elaborate puja, then you would take the opportunity to offer it before, because then the afterwards will also be quite elaborate. But otherwise, it can be offered after. There's no problem in either way. Then, mentioned, Krishna Kshetra mentions, the same type of twig you use for brushing your own teeth, you may offer to the Lord. See footnote page 183 of the supplement. You may also offer a tongue scraper at this time. It's called Jihua? Jihua Ulekani means it's the tongue scraper. So the reason that we know why we got to clean our tongue, but the whole concept of that has come because in the spiritual world, when Krishna takes his bath in the morning and Radharani takes their bath, they also clean their tongue. After they brush their teeth, then they clean their tongue. Right? They scrape their tongue. So it's done in the spiritual world. So that is 183 of the supplement. 183. Ooh. It's a nice shade. Footnote. Okay, in accordance with the Vedic tradition, twigs or leaves of certain trees should be used for brushing the teeth, because they contain natural cleansing agents that keep teeth and gums healthy. It is said that a person gains long life from brushing his teeth with a twig that comes from a tree which oozes white sap, while a bitter twig yields good health. A pungent twig yields strength, and an astringent twig yields a comfortable life. Maybe that's why we live in grass houses. But ours is pungent. Pungent and astringent, no? Red tooth powder. Yeah, so that means strength and comfortable life. So that must be why we have grass houses and open air and plenty of water and all that kind of stuff. Means everybody's got their concept of what comfortable life is. Like in the West, comfortable life means a shower that's so small you can't even turn around in, right? That's comfortable life. And it's considered, you know, savage that you have a pond to bathe in that's bigger than an Olympic-sized swimming pool, and you got it all to yourself to bathe in. That's considered, you know, savage and barbaric. Well, if you have a little dinky little plastic thing in the corner that you keep your arms real close and don't move too quickly or you'll bump into the walls, that's considered sophisticated and aristocratic. So everyone has their standard of comfortable life. Twigs from the highly antiseptic neem tree are most commonly used. These are bitter. The twig should be this diameter of the middle or little finger, 12 finger widths long. That means 12 finger widths means about 9 inches. It's from the tip of the little finger to the tip of the thumb on the outstretched palm. So that is 12 fingers. Right? Finger means the width of the finger, not the length of the finger. Otherwise, 12 fingers long would be like a 3-foot long, 1-meter toothbrush. Right? No, it means about 9 inches. Right? What would that be in centimeters?
9 inches?
Yeah. 22.5 centimeters. Okay. The bark should be intact on the twig. You shouldn't peel it off. One should not brush one's teeth with twigs from the palash, banyan, or peepal trees. Palash. I don't know. What is palash? I don't remember. As these trees are worshipable, one should also avoid using twigs from the malati, bilva, karavi, arka, Kadira and mango trees. Means these are also very auspicious trees. When Srila Prabhupada was in the western countries, he frequently used twigs from the eucalyptus tree for brushing his teeth. Yeah, so in India, neem twigs can be very easily obtained. Like that, they are bitter. and they are highly antiseptic, so they kill all the bacteria and that in the mouth. One brushes one's teeth with twigs, it doesn't mention here, but the teeth become exceedingly shiny. Like in the West, even you use, you know, modern toothpaste and all that for those who regularly go to the dentist, then every now and again they like to take some stuff and polish your teeth, right? But if you use these twigs, especially neem, then you'll find that the teeth are automatically very, very white. They'll be whiter than if you brush them, than you the dentist polishes them. They always stay very, very white. You know, so with prolonged use of them, they become very, very nice. Okay. Any questions on that? Okay. Then we have washing the Lord's feet. Padya. Offering Padya, Argya, Achmaniya, and Madhuparka are all traditional Vedic ways of welcoming a king or other distinguished guest. Pure water is often offered in place of any or all of these items. One may put flowers or tulsi leaves into water and offer it, thinking of the absent items. You may offer Padya before and after the Lord eats, as a reception after asana, after awakening the Lord and before putting him to rest. In other words, washing the feet is done when you receive somebody, like that. So it's done, you have to do it after the asana at this point. Asana, swagata, then you have the padya. But it mentions that other times can also be after the Lord wakes up, like you wake up, you go wash your feet, hands, mouth, face, like that. Before you take rest, you do that, and before and after eating. Right? These are natural times to do it. So in the puja, in the full worship, one will offer it all these times, the padyam. But as the main item, it is done there. And others will be then part of the 64. You know? It means there'll be expansions of this reception washing of the feet. Understand? The reception washing of the feet, padya, is the main item of the 16. Right? Then washing before and after waking or going to sleep or after eating, then this is part of, these are expansions of this original washing of the feet. You understand? So all these 16 items have their original position, and then you have the expansions, like asana. We mentioned that there's the asana when you receive the Lord at this time. That is the main asana, item of asana. But that has its expansions as a place for the Lord to be bathed, place for him to be dressed, a place for him to take his meals, and a place for him to rest. So those are all expansions of that asana. Okay? So these were described in the expansions of padya. Then next is argya. 8. Offering argya is a sign of welcome and respect. So Krishna Kshetra Prabhu explains, argya is a mixture of auspicious items offered above or touched to the head of an honored guest as part of reception. Means touch means sprinkled on the head. To literally offer a person argya entails either sprinkling it on his head or offering it into his hand so that he can sprinkle it over his own head. Therefore it is said an offering of argya is made to the hands. Either way is acceptable, although offering to the hands is better because it is considered more respectful. You should ring a bell in your left hand while offering argya. In other words, when argya is being offered, the bell must be rung. For the asana, swagata, even for the padya, the bell is not as so important. But argya must be rung. Right? Because this is specifically just being a very much honor of... Because when you do padya, you may have both hands engaged. But argya means you have the conch shell and it's only in one hand. And then that and the other hand will ring the bell. So that must be rung. So this argya is then very auspicious thing to be offered above the head and to the hands. Like that. So Bhaktivinoda mentions that it's offered above the head, like that, but then the meditation is poured on the hands, and they will take some of that and sprinkle it on their own head. Right? So, like in the Artik, we offer the Argya to the deity, then after we show it to the devotees and throw it on the devotees' heads. Right? That's Argya. It's not a bath. In the Artik, when you offer the conch with the water, that's Argya. That's not a bath. That. Then, number 9, offering water for sipping, achman. Achman may be offered before and after offering food and bathing or dressing the Lord, and after putting on the Lord's upavita. So at this time it is offered after the padyam, argyam, achmaniyam as the formal, and then its expansions of achman are going to be before and after you eating, after you, the Lord bathes, after the Lord dresses, and after putting on the Brahman thread, because with the Brahman thread will come the tilak, like that. So these are all the times when the achman is expanded and done again. Yes. It's cloth. You've never given anybody a respectable position cloth.
What's the purpose of
the cloth? What's the purpose of offering argya? Why offer camphor? Why offer incense? Why offer flowers? Cloth is nice or not nice? Cloth is a nice thing to offer or not? I mean, maybe it would be better to have a BMW or something. We could show that or something. You know, or maybe a chrome chopped Harley or something. We could show that maybe. Or a new set of green glue for standing Krishna's sika on end to look good on Soho Street. Or some new studs for his nose or something. Or his lower lip. You know. But make sure they're silver. You know what I'm saying? It's just cloth is being offered because it's a nice thing to offer. Of course, they'll think so many things. One can offer it also for drying the hand after doing the argya, because you pour the water on the hands. You know what I'm saying? So it's just some nice cloth to offer, and it's also done in this. You know, can be for that. Doesn't mean that you're bath, right? Water doesn't necessarily just... See, for a Westerner especially, water does not mean bath. There's plenty of water and they never take bath. So why is it in this case it always has to be a bath? The Lord doesn't take 7 baths a day. Right? Right? I mean, you look at it. He's taking his bath before Mangalartik, then after that, then you're doing a bathing for him, so that's another one. So actually 7 plus 1, 8. So that means it takes 8 baths a day. You understand? He takes his bath in the morning, and those other 7, those are argyas. You understand? Okay. 10. Offering madhuparka, then water for sipping, madhuparka and punarachman. Prabhupada, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, is called madhuparka achman. Like that, because they go together. You know? Okay, some sources indicate that madhuparka should be offered in a cup to the right hand of the Lord for him to accept. After madhuparka, again offer achman. In the standard list of 16 upacharas, achman offered after madhuparka is counted as a separate upachar. In other words, you have achman and then you have punar achman, means all the other achmans. So this is the head of all those other achmans. So the madhuparka and the achman go together, because you're not going to do madhuparka without achman. I think in the Sringa Purana we came across it, the story of madhuparka. It's okay, hey, just leave the cat alone. You know. So then the story of madhuparka. He's a personality. I forget the full details, but he was given the blessings that the Madhu Parka would always be offered. So then that is done by, I think we explained it, by the middle finger and the thumb touching together. You have this cup that is there. It's held in front of the right hand. And then one very lightly dips the fingers in and throws one drop towards the east, means you're facing whichever direction you're facing. That would be the east, one to the west, one to the south, one to the north. And then you take another drop, and that is thrown into the mouth. You know, like that. So then naturally, then one will wash the hands and do achman. So the achman goes with the Madhu Parka, like that. And so then this punar achman. So when you're after this, any other achman that you do for the Lord, it can be called achmaniyam or it can be called punar achmaniyam. But generally, it's called achmaniyam. Okay, is this all understood? To hear, yes. It's a respect for Argya and Madhu Parka. These are like, you know, somebody big walks in, you offer these things. You know, like Vyasadeva walks in, the Supreme Lord walks in, like that. Like when in the Mahabharata. Or even, I think even in the Bhagavatam. You know, I think it mentions when Yudhishthira would hear that Krishna was coming or Vyasadeva, if someone like that was coming, then I think it was the Rajasuya who was saying, you know, get ready the Argya. You know, prepare the Argya. You know, so they'd bring out a seat, right? So they bring a seat, so that's asana. Well, they sit down, make sure they're comfortable. They'd wash their feet. They would offer the argya. They would offer the Madhu Parka. It's just a ritual of reception. Exact details why. It's just like, you know, does anybody ask, oh, why do you, when you see a friend, why do you pat him on the back? You know, you'll say, well, that's a ritual. If it's not explained, then explain. Why do you pat him on the back? Why? What for? You know? You understand? Why when somebody goes you have to say bye-bye? Or why do you have to wave your hands? Or see you later. You may not see them later, so why say it? You know what I'm saying? So there's so many things. So this is the Vedic way of doing it. There is a whole story of Madhu Parka. I don't remember it. But the point is my point is on this of saying that is, one may say, well, Vedas is so ritualistic, so is the West. Why a Christmas cake? Why the cake on Christmas has to be something that's heavy as a brick, got 5 million, you know, nuts and dried fruits in it, you know, and you have to soak it in rum for a month in an old hand towel. I mean, why? You know, why can't it be a lemon meringue pie or a, you know, you know, chocolate mousse or something. I mean, why does it have to be that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the whole point is the living, the human being must have ritual. The human being cannot live without religiosity, which means ritual. They cannot function. You know? They absolutely, even the guys on the street, the lowest of the low, roughest, nastiest, they have their ritual. They have their handshake. They have the things that they say. They have the way they dress. And if you don't do it like that, then you know, you're not part of the scene. So they have to have their ritual. So the point is now it's a matter of, do we accept Krishna's rituals or not? We should understand them. And we should ask. There's no problem in asking. But we should not ask in a challenging way, you know, like, you know, well, why that, you know, that's stupid. So is everything else is done in the world.
No, my real question was, is it the Lord, he's supposed to like drink it, or like you say,
I said it's just like I just said.
Like a big bandana and some like milk and some
Yeah, it's auspicious, it's purifying, it's all auspicious items, it's yogurt, it's things from the cow, it's, you know, like that. So it's purifying, just like panchagavya is purifying. It's auspicious, it's purifying. So that's the principle, but it's not like a, you know, a strawberry milkshake, you know, that he sits down and, you know. It's not a snack.
Yeah.
Snack is called naivedya.
Yeah.
like that. Sometimes it's been described as a snack, but it's not. Oh, okay. No, that, then you just make that more clear. Yes.
After changing asana, you offer the first five items like svadhika, asana, svadhika, svadhika, arghya, asana.
We haven't. Oh, I see. Okay. Where is he mentioning that? Yeah, that's on this side.
It's the principle.
We're on this side.
It is the principle of offering asana after offering.
Means Padya, Argya, Achmaniya go together. They're a package deal. Right? Padya and Achman can be offered without Argya. But generally you'll never see Argya without Padya and Achman. It's done before he sits down. Yeah. You mean you may bring him to the place and you offer all those things and then you ask him to eat. In other words, when you're in that case, when you're doing asana, you're bringing him from one situation into the place where they're going to eat. But within that, then you're going to take him to the place where he'll wash his feet. And then, you know, sit down, do his achman, then sit, or sit and do achman. Then you'll offer the naivedya. Right? And it, see, if we understand asana as the situation, within that is going to be the place for the Lord to sit, but also the facility for all other aspects of that asana. You understand? So within the bhojasana includes the place for washing the hands and feet and mouth and all that. You know, like that. It includes a place for, you know, sitting afterwards and putting chandan and garlands and, you know, chewing pan and all that. And then from there, then you can go into the Paryankasan, like that, and then go and take rest, like that. But that'll be in a different place. You're not going to rest just where you ate. That'll be a different room, a different place, right? Or even if it's in the same place, like you may have a house and you ate on the veranda and then the veranda will be cleaned and then they'll put out something and then you'll rest there. But you've changed the situation. The situation is not the same anymore. You understand? So if you have, find that asana is before padyam and achman in the bhojasan, that's because he's come into the situation. The feet have been washed. Then he'll sit, he'll do his achman. And then, you know, idam naivedyam, idam paniyam, like that. Does that make sense? Whether it made sense to anybody else is another thing. Okay, so we'll stop here, and then tomorrow we'll continue with the... We'll start with snan, the bathing. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.